From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our first connection this hour was made in the blue-collar Boston neighborhood known as Southie, for South Boston. In Southie, many people grow up, or at least in some of the worst parts, the rougher parts of the neighborhoods, maybe assuming that they won't leave, that there is a cycle. People like Margie Walsh, who struggles to support her daughter. Then there's the story of a man named Mike Dillon. Mike grew up in the same area, but he's become a doctor. Mike, more convinced that people like Margie are poor or struggling because they make bad choices. Margie wants Mike to know that sometimes luck plays a role. Now, Margie and Mike are characters in the play Good People, showing now through the 16th at Jiva Theater, but they could very well be real people. And the debate they have about how to succeed is the kind of debate that is at the center of American life and politics. How much do we owe our success to good fortune? How much is hard work and determination? And yes, choices. Good People looks at the heart of that issue. This hour, we're looking at art as reality. We're going to be talking about Good People. We're going to be talking about West Side Story and some of the parallels to some of the debates happening in our own culture now. Let's start with welcoming a couple of the stars of the show of Good People. Constance Macy is Margie. Constance, nice to have you here.
Hi, nice to see you.
Sean Patrick Riley is Mike Dillon and also a Southie native.
How are you?
But don't say Sobo.
Do not say Sobo.
Okay. Yeah. Southie's okay?
Southie's fine.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you for being here. And on the phone is Mark Cuddy, Jiva Theater Artistic Director. Mark, how are you?
Good. Good to join you.
Well, thanks for taking the time as well. And I'll start with you, Sean, because you're from Southie. I've never been to Southie. Mm-hmm. What is it? What's it like?
It's kind of rough. You know, you bringing up Sobo is kind of funny to me.
Is that the modernized discussion?
It's like a lot of neighborhoods in the United States right now. They're sort of changing over and being gentrified. But when I was there, and I think until quite recently, working class, Irish neighborhood, a little rough around the edges, shall we say.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. And Margie is a character who has a number of struggles, holding a job. She has a daughter who has some needs. And Margie, why don't you tell Margie, Constance, why don't you tell us about, I'm looking at you and I'm saying Margie. Can you tell us a little bit more about Margie?
She dropped out of high school because of her daughter. She had a daughter when she was 17. Her daughter is special needs. And so, you know, the daughter is now like 30 years old, but will always be in her care, dependent upon Margie. She's a single mother, and, you know, she goes from part-time job. She'll keep a part-time job as long as she can until she gets canned for being late all the time because, you know, she can't rely on... I mean, she has friends that will help her with her daughter, but, you know, she can't afford full-time care. And so because of these circumstances, she's constantly, you know, having to look for a new job.
It is, for me, so interesting to see the debate about choices and what makes for success, lucky breaks, lucky moments in life that can shape our outcome, crystallized so nicely as it is in Good People, because there's not an easy answer and there's no, it's luck or it's hard work. I mean, obviously it's sort of a combination of many things, but Sean, do you remember growing up in Southie, did those kind of conversations or at least observations happen where some people feel like I'm never getting out of here and some people feel like, you know, I need a break?
Absolutely. I think that the deck was probably a little stacked toward believing that luck had almost everything to do with it, that the only way that you change your circumstances, that somehow you got a lucky break. So the idea of, you know, this this debate or the conflict between, you know, what is it that makes us successful, the myth of the self-made man and everything. When you get down to the reality of living in a place like South Boston, particularly in the 70s and the 80s, it's a combination of a lot of things. But, you know, it's a bunch of Irish Catholics, and we have a tendency to be a little bit superstitious, and luck seems to play a huge part in it. But there is also that very real, you know, blue-collar chip on our shoulder that no, I worked for this. I think an interesting part of the debate is even if you have both of those things, even if you have a woman who works really, really hard and she does get a break, the missing element seems to be the life skills that are necessary to recognize what that break is when it presents itself to you. And where do we, you know, where do we garner those life skills that say, yeah, you know what, take this road and not that road? And do we get that through teachers and parents?
Yeah, so. I think what Sean and Constance are describing is the kind of neighborhood and the kind of debate and conversation and challenge that's happening in Rochester and in many places across our country. So it's South Boston and Good People. It could be so many different places. I also think to some degree there is that risk, as Sean describes it, this feeling that if you succeed, you got to get lucky. You got to get a lucky break.
Right.
And that can be cancerous if you're convinced you've got no shot. At the same time, Constance Margie's character in Good People seems convinced that the only reason Mike succeeds is because he did get a break.
Well, he got many breaks. I mean, he was smart, for starters, you know, and he had a dad who had his back all the time. Mm-hmm. Margie feels that she had neither of those things going for her. And
absolutely.
So any leg up, you know, is help mm-hmm. in getting out.
Well, before I bring your director in, let me ask Sean to describe Mike a little bit more than the characters, because, again, Margie's character is from South Boston. Mike's from South Boston. Very different life situations in the show.
Absolutely. I think Mike is the guy, the proverbial I got up and out kind of guy. You know, he is a smart kid, and he does have, this support from his parents that, there's a couple of lines in the play that really, really stand out to me that Margie has about Mike, which is Mike is running down how rough it was to grow up in the projects. And Margie says, the way my father worked, come on, you know, it was rough there. And she said, well, let's start with the fact that you had a father and he worked. And another thing, you know, the most heartbreaking moment in the play for me personally is toward the end of the play, they're talking about this particular lucky break that Mike gets, that if he hadn't had, he probably would have wound up in prison. And, you know, Margie brings up that if your father hadn't been looking out the window when you got into the fight, you would have wound up in Walpole. You would have wound up bunking in Walpole for the rest of your life. And Mike says, no, that wouldn't have happened. And she says, but if your father hadn't been looking out the window, it would have happened. Mike says, he was looking out the window. That was my moment. And the most heartbreaking moment in the play for me as an actor, as a human being, is Margie says, and that's lucky. I never had anyone looking out a kitchen window for me. So back to this idea of luck on the one hand and hard work and determination on the other, but there's also that third thing of that, is that a life skill? Is that just plain dumb luck that Mike had someone that was actually watching out for him? And what happens when people don't have anyone watching out for them? Is that why we're falling through the cracks? Is that part of the larger debate, the larger national debate, that I am my brother's keeper? We do need parents looking out the kitchen window to make sure that our kids receive those life skills that are necessary to recognize what the lucky break is when it appears.
Do you see why Good People is such a popular and powerful performance? That, again, Jeeva is showing Good People through the 16th. You might have heard that it debuted on Broadway in 2011.
I think it was 2011.
Yeah, I mean, Frances McDormand and Tate Donovan, two very well-known actors, were in it. You're hearing now exactly why. And Mark Cuddy, when it comes to your role as director here, at least from what I'm observing, this is not a caricature, that there are layers here that I'm not sure the audience walks out knowing exactly who's fully right or fully wrong. And that's probably a very important part of this discussion.
I think it is. I think the layers are something that we're getting response to. People are using that phrase, multi-layered, when they're trying to describe the experience of watching Good People, because a lot of it, let's say right up front, there are some very, very, very funny scenes in Good People. But there are some funny characters. Margie's best friend Jeannie, the mouthy from Southie, is what her nickname, and she's, you know, she's outrageous. And her Margie's landlady is a bit of a just a bit of a nutcase, and she's all and they go play. They play bingo a lot, and you sit. I mean, there's just a lot of good, fun, but caustic humor. The good Southie caustic humor that happens. And audiences are really laughing, but it's set against that, and that's the very Irish way of walking the tightrope between humor and despair. but the layers and the nuances, it was a joy, Evan, to come to work every day with this cast of six really terrific actors and the script. I think we all just kept going, this play is really, really good. And it will take all of our investigative work in the 4 weeks of rehearsal to mine all the nuances and to get the tonality right. There are scene to scene, you can laugh or get very angry or have emotion or toss things off, you know, what's important, what's not. It took a lot of work, but it's finally pitched because the play is so good.
We're talking to Mark Cuddy, the Jiva Theater Artistic Director. Constance Macy is Margie. Sean Patrick Riley is Mike Dillon in Good People. You have less than 2 weeks to see it at Jiva, and you can see why people are talking about it. I pulled an audio clip from that Broadway performance with Frances McDormand and Tate Donovan, and again, that says nothing about the great talent that's in the room right now. And I know they're not going to take it personally. I actually also edited a little of the language out, so this will work on our public radio. So let's listen to a scene here. And yes, there are many scenes that you can find that are definitely funny. This is a little bit more intense, where Margie is trying to lay out to Mike the struggle she's had in holding down a job, and Mike is convinced, well, stop blaming other people and blame yourself. Let's listen to the conversation.
I got a job. I got a bunch of jobs, in fact. And every one of them sucked, because what other kind of job could I get? Not much choice there either,
I'm
afraid.
And you lost most of those jobs?
As a matter of fact, I did.
Why?
Usually because I was late.
Well, there's the choice.
Would you stop it?
She chose to be late.
I didn't choose to be late.
You don't have to explain yourself.
One time I got my car taken. Why'd I lose my car? Because I missed a payment. Why did I miss a payment? Because I had to pay a dentist instead. Why did I have to pay a dentist? No, I have done this 100 times in my head, Mikey. I think you should hear it too. Why did I have to pay a dentist? Because I didn't have insurance and I cracked a tooth. And I ignored it for 6 months until an abscess formed. Why'd I crack a tooth?
I don't care.
Because one night I thought I'd save a little money and skip dinner, but I got hungry, so I snacked on a piece of candy brittle instead. And that is all it took. One piece of candy brittle, and I was out of a job again. And that's the way it always is. And if it's not the candy brittle, then it's Joyce's medication, or my phone getting cut off, or Russell Gill is breaking in and stealing my microwave. And you want to tell me about choices while you sit up here practically breaking your arm, patting yourself on the back for all you accomplished.
Strong stuff.
Yeah.
So you're, and I know
that's how that scene's supposed to
no,
go.
No, don't say that.
Thanks.
Sorry,
thanks,
Mark.
Sean,
I guess.
Right.
No. Is it strange hearing it in other voices, by the way?
Not really.
It's just, different actors make different choices. There's that word again.
I love that. I love that. All right, so let me actually ask you, Constance, a very ignorant question, and it comes from ignorance because I have never been in a stage performance myself.
Okay.
And Mark talked about the way this performance, especially in Good People, has come together and sort of gelled and cohered over time. Do you, throughout the course of a run, do you ever find yourself playing a line at all differently or based on the rhythm or sort of the evolution of how you're feeling? Does that change at all?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That changes every night. You know, we certainly have a framework for the choices that we've made. And, you know, obviously we hit our marks and we say all of our words. But an audience comes in, they bring a brand new energy in every single performance. You know, you get maybe a slightly different choice out of your scene partner, and so that affects how you respond, and that's why live theater is so unique and why I love it so much is because, you know, we're living in the moment every night as if it were the first time.
What do you think? I'd love to hear the same approach from you, Sean. What do you think?
I there's no disagreement from me as far as what Constance just said. We worked really hard in the rehearsal to make those discoveries, to figure out, you know, what the path was, and we had a great director. I mean, Mark Cuddy is a wonderful director and a fantastic script. But yeah, every night, you know, it depends on what's happening. And although the framework is always going to be there, and there's always the play is the thing, and the story does get told, it's remarkable to me how an audience can change the temperature in the room. And every audience is different, and you know, the performances, they vary just even if it's slightly. And again, that's the reason that you know, not only am I, and I'm sure Constance as well, so attracted to the theater and dedicated our lives to acting on the stage, but I think it's the reason that audiences continue to come, is that, you know, where else can you go and in real time, pardon me, in real time, be in the same room at the same time that these actors are embodying these characters and making these choices in real time, mm-hmm. in real life, in the same room, sharing that experience together, and you can go and hear the truth of the moment, the truth of the play in real time for 2 hours.
I should have mentioned, by the way, for our listening audience, because we're going to be talking about not only Good People, but West Side Story, and again, some of these parallels to kind of art as life. And if you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Before I get to some of the reviews, which are just about uniformly glowing, let's get to Bill in Webster. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks, Evan, for having this show. This is great to hear the actors and director following up on. I saw it a week and a half ago, and I just want to validate what I'm hearing. I'm still thinking about this play a week and a half later as it relates to my own life, and I encourage everybody to go see it. I'm a member, and it was just fantastic performance, and the script and the direction is very thoughtful, and as I said, it's given me a lot to think about, and I read the book Outliers before seeing this play, and it struck a lot of parallels there as to what may explain success and opportunities that arise in our life.
Bill, can I?
No, that's all I had to say. It was just fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, let me ask you, Bill, if you don't mind. When you say that it's been sort of sitting with you since seeing it, that you've been thinking about what you saw in Good People, in the context of the conversation we're having here, did you find yourself gravitating toward one character or another's argument, you know, whether it's Margie or Mike or somewhere in the middle, and did it?
Well, that's a good question, Evan. So I'm 56 years old. So as a young man, I used to think like Mike, maybe. But now as somebody with, you know, approaching retirement perhaps, and a lot of different experiences with family, caring for family members and seeing different outcomes. Certainly Margie is who in the end I identified with.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and could see clearly her reasons, her point of view. And I just, like I said, I reflected on my own life, certain critical decisions that, points where somebody was looking out for me, and just reflection on some important decisions, and things could have turned out so radically different.
That's Bill. Thanks for the call. That's a great call, and very first of all, for our actors in the room, it's got to be. I know you've been hearing it in the run of the show, but that's got to still be very validating and very gratifying.
It's incredibly validating. I met a waitress the other day who she waited on me, and she recognized me. She'd seen the play, and her name was also Margaret, and she told me that she was inspired to go back to school.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm all verklempt.
You really are, aren't you? I mean, that's really, it's an amazing thing because, you know, Mark Cuddy, that phone call is one of many. And That's very moving because it's not only a fun show to watch and with great performances, but look at the way you're making people think.
Well, you know what? It's emotional and it's ethical too. It kind of challenges the way you look at the world, which is, you know, your own sort of set of ethics. It's a great question you posed, Evan, and Bill really came through. I think. I mean, people are going back and forth when they're watching the show, and part of the reason they're going back and forth gets to what these two actors said a few minutes ago about the live quality. I really didn't know until first day of rehearsal that these two were matched for each other. And, you know, in the Broadway clip that we heard, that was really the Frances McDormand show. I mean, she was dominating in that entire performance. And the Mikey really wasn't up to snuff, according to not only to me, but to a number of people. And I had never worked with Constance before, so I didn't know what she brought. I mean, I auditioned her, but never in the rehearsal room. Didn't know what her what she could bring and give to the other actor. And Sean has worked at Jiva a few times, but I've never directed him. So one of the exciting parts of watching this live performance now of Good People is experiencing on stage what I experienced in the rehearsal room for a month, which is that these two go toe-to-toe, and they are they're throwing it back and forth, and it's very live, and things do change because they are listening and responding. And that's what you want to do as an actor, you know, but it's not pre-planned. Yeah, they know, they have their objectives, and they know what the framework is, but it's live. Well, really exciting.
And Mark, what I want to do is I want to read the only negative portion of a review I could find. and this is not even about your show. This is actually going back to the Broadway performance. And it happens to come from, now I feel like we're just falling into stereotypes, but it happens to come from the Wall Street Journal. And Terry Teachout wrote in the Wall Street Journal in 2011 about the Broadway performance, quote, "In Good People, success is purely a matter of luck, and virtue inheres solely in those who are luckless. So what if Mikey worked hard? Why should anybody deserve any credit for working hard? Hence the crude deck stacking built into the script of Good People, in which Mikey is the callous villain who forgot where he came from, and Margie the plucky Southy gal who may be the least little bit racist, but is otherwise a perfect heroin victim." I actually didn't get that at all. Whether I'm watching...
They're evenly matched. They're evenly matched in our production.
But I didn't even get that watching the McDormand, Tate Donovan clips, because for me, I didn't think it was caricature like that. I thought that there is great, passionate, sort of almost a manifesto for each person's belief set, but knowing that the audience understands the truth is in the middle. That's sort of, I never took it as a caricature. What do you think?
Well, the audience, we have most audience members siding by the end. I mean, it conflicted a bit and going back and forth, but actually, I think a lot of audience members are taking sides, but they're taking not just Margie's side or not just Mikey's side, but and when they take a strong side, I think they are ignoring the gray in the middle.
Yeah.
The conflict in the middle.
I think people are much more likely to say, "I agree more with Mike or more with Margie," as opposed to, "I just agree with one or the other," because you're watching these scenes and you're saying, "Come on, Mark, you can't be late to every job you have and expect that things won't go wrong. You've got to find a way. Don't you want to pull yourself out?" But then you want to say to Mike, "Come on, man, look at, she's raising an adult daughter. She's a single mom, and you're acting like it's just easy, that why don't you just get a car and get to your job on time?" I can't do a Boston accent. but you know, so you do understand both framings. And those are the kind of framings that when we talk on this program every week about poverty in Rochester, poverty anywhere, we talk about social mobility, all of those things. I don't think that the voices who only would believe Margie or Mikey are right tend to get a lot of traction, because I think that, you know, you may agree more with one or the other, Anyway, Mark, that's sort of where I am, and I think that's probably where the audience ends up. Whether they agree with one or the other, it's more of one or more of the other, as opposed to wholeheartedly Margie's wrong, wholeheartedly Mike is wrong.
Well, I think we have it all, because I've heard a lot of people convinced of one thing or the other. Yeah.
Well, but maybe, and let me ask the actors in the room then. Maybe if people can walk out thinking that only Margie's right or only Max or it's 100%, that to me is a little troubling, and that this kind of performance should make us at least reflect a little bit on the nuances, I would hope.
Absolutely. I think the fact that that our caller is still thinking about it 10 days later or
yes.
a week later, I think that's probably a little more accurate than people walking out of this particular production on one side or the other, 100%.
Yeah.
I will say that while I admire the quote and I admire the writer, I'm thinking that Terry from the Wall Street Journal might have a slight ideological bent
well,
to
sure.
his argument.
Yes.
And I think that I'm not sure that you know, coming to a performance of a play is going to change the mind of someone who is so entrenched in their ideas, whether they agree with Margie or they agree with Mike. And, you know, it's not really our job to pull them out of that ideological bent. I think what the best that we can hope for, and I think that this production absolutely nails it, is, but can you consider the other point of view? Can that be considered?
Yeah.
And I think, like what Mark said, and I thank him for the compliment, the two actors that he's cast do have the ability to live in that moment as it's happening and be affected by what the other person is saying. And you watch these two characters sway. There are moments in the play where, you know, Mike is going to have that, well, okay, yeah, maybe you're right. And Margie might have that, okay, I can see your point, but don't you understand this?
Yeah.
So it's not, what a beautiful day to be talking about this on Election Day. It's not, everything is not black and white in life. It's just
it's not coincidence that you're here on Election Day. That's
oh,
okay. I think it's important to have these conversations. And I think that there is... I think that we do need to get to the point where we cannot have people like Margie who really think that you can never have upward mobility without pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need the people who have succeeded to realize that occasionally someone who doesn't catch the same break they got is mm-hmm. going to make – that it isn't just laziness.
And right.
There's that word that is used as a weapon sometimes, especially for people in poverty.
Absolutely.
And, it's not
and
just
well, both sides of that debate have there's problems for me in both sides of that debate.
I agree.
Number one, that upward mobility, and I perhaps during the time that I was growing up in the 80s, upward mobility became a dirty word. You know, the yuppie, the... I'm going to crush everybody to get what I want. Greed is good kind of philosophy
right.
on the one hand. And anyone who would have a, dare I say, liberal point of view when looking at poverty and saying, no, help needs to be given, both of those things have become so polarized that we are staring down the barrel of a proverbial gun saying, there is absolutely no way you're right. There is absolutely no way I'm wrong. And part of the American dream always seemed to be this idea that, you know, my kids were going to do better than I did. And that's quite simply not happening anymore. So I think we need to find, or we choose, if you will, to find a scapegoat for that and to say, well, the reason that my kids aren't doing better than I did is it's because of this or
yep.
it's because of this. And that completely closes down the discussion. And we have reached a point where there is no discussion. There's debate. And I'm not even sure it's debate anymore, because it's not debate the way I learned it in college. I mean, it's no one's listening to the other person's point of view. We're just shouting at each other. And who shouts loudest wins. And so, you know, that's all really terrific to get sponsors for a particular radio station, or to, you know, have ratings kind of skyrocket on television. But it doesn't do anything to help us to struggle to find an answer to any of these problems.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I've got to get moving on this conversation. But Eric and Webster wants to jump in as well. Go ahead, Eric.
Thank you. So it's clear that there seem to be two competing narratives about how we think about the poor. One is that the poor are lazy and that their current situation is a function of their unwillingness to try. The other is that they are victims of circumstances over which they have no control. And we seem to be conducting this debate as if you have to choose between either of those narratives.
I think we're saying that both those narratives are too extreme to be fully accurate.
Right, and I reject those exactly. Yeah. But I want to take it to the next level of, so if we can agree that we all have a stake as a society in helping folks like that succeed, my question would be, what set of policies, public policies, are most effective, should we consider adopting in stacking the decks in favor of success? I mean, today's election day. So let's get beyond the divisive and simplistic rhetoric and ask that question. You know, if transportation is an issue, are there things that we can do around giving poor people access to cars or helping with childcare? What are the policies that you would think ought to be adopted along those lines?
Well, Eric, thanks for the call. And fortunately for our actors, we're running out of time, so they can't fully answer that. Mark Cuddy, did you know you were going to come on the program and offer policy prescriptions to solve this? And by the way, I don't make light of Eric's question at all. I think it is the question. I think if we agree that we're somewhere in the middle, what do we do about it is the question. But Mark, to some degree, Good People allows your audience to think about those and you know, chew on that for a while, as opposed to offering an easy solution, I would think.
Yeah, and I would just end by saying, you know, those of us who work in the professional theater, make it our lives, who work on plays for the most part, instead of musicals, strictly musicals, I think the public might be surprised that we do it because we actually want to make a difference with the material we work on and that experience in the theater with an audience. You know, it's not really subversive, but it's truly not because we want applause at the curtain call. That has little to do with it. It's because, people like such as Sean and Constance have tremendous talent, but also the passion to dig into our humanity and to pose questions, not give answers.
Well, I think it is no surprise that intrinsic value is at the heart of great artists. So, Constance and Sean, the last question for you. This is the low-hanging fruit question whenever it's a Boston-based production. How easy is it to turn on a Boston accent? I'm not asking you to do it.
It's not hard.
And she's so wicked awesome at it that it's not a problem.
It's actually harder to let it go.
Yes. Have you found yourself in the course of this production just walking through all of a sudden you say, "Whoa, yeah. I didn't turn it off."
She'll call me and it'll be that way.
Yeah. Well, when we were rehearsing, it was hard to ever.
In a month and a half. So,
Mark Cuddy hasn't even actually ever heard your non-Boston voice. Oh, Constance Macy is Margie. Sean Patrick Riley is Mike Dillon. Mark Cuddy is the artistic director at Jiva Theater, and Good People is still showing through the 16th of November. I'm honored to have you in studio to join us. Thank you for having the conversation.
Thank you for having us.
It was fun.
Great stuff. Mark, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, short break, and we're going to shift our attention to West Side Story right here on member-supported public radio next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we open with a conversation on what happened on Election Day. We'll talk to some of the winners, We'll get a look at what Election Day means going forward for New York State policy and politics. Then we talk to investigative journalist David K. Johnston. David K. is going to talk about minimum wage and pay disparity. It's all coming up Wednesday on Connections.
On the next Fresh Air, we remember Tom Magliozzi, the beloved public radio host who has died at the age of 77 of complications related to Alzheimer's disease. Tom and his brother Ray gave us so many laughs, not to mention good advice, on their show Car Talk. We'll listen back to our interview in which the Magliozzi brothers talked about how they became the car guys. Join us.
Tonight at 7.
Welcome back to Connections as we move the conversation forward here. I'm having so much fun talking about art and its impact, and it's the way it makes us think about our lives, our communities, our culture. West Side Story is going to do that. The Rochester Latino Theater Company is getting ready to present West Side Story starting on the 22nd of November. Is that right? Let me ask Eric Johnson, the director. Is that right?
Yes, the 22nd through the 30th at the Kodak Center for Performing Arts, formerly Theater on the Ridge.
Okay, formerly Theater on the Ridge. Mm-hmm. So you've got a location there. Are you ready? Are you ready?
You're still a few weeks away. Yep, just 2 weeks away and getting everything finalized.
All right, I'm going to ask the director. You just heard the conversation we had about good people.
Yes.
And you're seeing, and I know you're in art because of these exact reasons, that it can move this community not only to enjoy a performance, but to have a discussion about these issues. What did you think about what you just heard, and how do you think it relates to West Side Story?
Something that Mark Cuddy just said that really struck me was at RAPA and the Rochester Latino Theater Company, we both feel very strongly that our shows are more than just a musical or more than a play. We're trying to make an impact in the Rochester community and in individuals' lives. We did In the Heights last spring, and we were overwhelmed with the community response and who was there and what they took from it. Just doing a show, you know, anybody could just put on a show or put on a musical. There's plenty of productions of West Side Story out in the community. But what makes us different is that we make an experience out of it. And we try to change people's lives, and we try to better the community from it.
Okay. Annette Ramos, executive producer. How are you doing? How are you reaching out to the community to get them involved with this?
Wonderful question. First of all, Rochester Latino Theater Company's mission and vision is to educate and to also educate the community at large, but also to be a place for Latino artists to cultivate their art and their talent. One of the things that we did for our production was we had a culturalist specialist on our staff, someone who is at every single rehearsal, who goes through the particulars of the cultural integrity of the show. We also had Dr. Cordova, who is a specialist on Puerto Rican history from Nazareth College, come and actually speak to our entire cast about the mass migrations of Puerto Ricans in the 1950s. So she gave them a real sense of backstory and a real sense of integrity. In fact, one of our most established resident actors, long history of being a theater person in Rochester, said, "Annette, I've played this part 4 times, and I never knew that about this character." So that goes to show you how we're really developing the integrity and the cultural connection. It's not just a show. It's an experience. And also with the cast that we have about 45% of our cast are local Latino and African American artists. So we're very excited.
Amazing to think that history could be lost. And I think it's just beautiful. And Dr. Cordova, by the way, is wonderful.
Exactly.
I've tried to bring her on this broadcast, and for our listeners, she will be in the future. In fact, when we had the conversation about the history, teaching the real history of Christopher Columbus, she was very helpful on that score. So I'm just fascinated by that history. But let me back up and say, if you haven't seen West Side Story, let me ask you, Ivana Melendez and Kyle Critelli, Anita and Tony, to talk about your characters and the show itself. Let me start. You're pointing across this table. We're going to start with Kyle Critelli.
Right.
Hello, Tony.
Hello.
Tell us about the show.
Well, for those of you who don't know, it's a modernized Romeo and Juliet in the 50s. Tony's character is, you know, the big dreamer, and he finds this girl. He was in the Jets, which is the gang of the, you know, white boys of New York. And he started the gang with his best buddy, but he's missing something in his life, and he needs to find this something, and he finds that in Maria, which is the love of his life. And I don't know, do you want to take over with the,
And let me jump in with Ivana Melendez, who plays Anita.
Yes. My character is Bernardo, who's the leader of the Sharks, the Puerto Rican. She is his lover, and Tony falls in love with Bernardo's sister. So that becomes a huge confrontation, and that's what the whole conflict is about. Anita is a person that enjoys life, and she's very flirty and loves that she lives in America now, because in Puerto Rico way back then, the whole point of moving to America is for the opportunities to live a better life. When she sees all of these things happening, her character, I think it changes a lot throughout the show. She's this fiery person, and she kind of loses herself with reality. She's also a dreamer, not as much as Tony, but she does lose herself a little bit with it.
I fear it's not going to end well.
I mean, come to the show and see.
22nd through the 30th at the Old Theater on the Ridge. It's what's the name of the theater now?
The Kodak Center for Performing Arts.
Okay, and that's the Old Theater on the Ridge. 22nd through the 30th, they're getting ready to show West Side Story, and the show itself, obviously, it's got a great historical model. It's a very interesting show. But Annette, when we talk about the Jets and the Sharks, when mm-hmm. you talk about gangs, it is terribly sad for me to even think in that reality. And we can talk about the fact that we had a conversation about in Good People, when you talk about your circumstances. For people like me who grow up not seeing gangs, mm-hmm. it wasn't a part of my world. It is really sad to think about the fact that this is still sort of a relevant discussion.
You're absolutely right. And part of what we've done through the Rochester Latino Theater Company is actually connected to a social component. We're currently running at Avenue D Rec Center an anti-gang violence program related to our show. So again, the Rochester Latino Theater Company isn't just another theater company in Rochester. We are a movement. We are a community of Latinos that are really speaking to the issues that are affecting and impacting our people. And with that said, the stereotypes and the racism and the confusion around Puerto Rican identity in America is a huge topic, not only within this show, but within our own communities today. So we are thrilled to be able to do that outreach. I had 12 girls last night at that rec center, and one of them came up to me and said, "My brother's in trouble. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what to tell him?" That is movement. That is change. That is impact. And that's what this is for. Eric and I and our community of actors, we really look at it as part of, we're educating, we're enlightening, and we're having those discussions in real time.
Is it still true that for young people who are pulled toward gangs, do they tend to be male?
Well, predominantly, yes, but more and more girls, and they might not look like the gang formula, but they are clustering together. There's a lot of bullying behavior that clusters. And in fact, we asked our girls last night, what does belonging look like? And that's a really powerful question to ask our youth today. What does belonging look like? Is it a sense of someone having your back? Is it a sense of someone looking out that window when you have that pivotal moment in your life that someone is there to pull you out of that, clutches? And yes to all that. So having the discussion, bringing it, and the city of Rochester and Ibero-American Action League all jumped on this bandwagon of this project because they realize that through art, through the experience of art, we can really speak about reality and life and mimic, so to speak, what is really happening in our communities.
Yeah, remarkable stuff. And when we talked to the actors from Good People, you saw one of them get emotional talking about the reaction. Let me ask Ivana and Kyle. Kyle, I mean, look at the possible impact of this program. What does that mean to you?
Oh, geez. Playing this role has showed me so much about the, I guess, ill-equipped nature of these young people in gangs to really deal with the emotional and just overwhelming burdens that, you know, happen in the show for all those who know the story, it's unbelievably gripping to me. I mean, the whole second act for Tony's character, you're going through a roller coaster. You know, you find out terrible things, you do terrible things, and it's unbelievably impacting to as an actor to be playing these roles where they put you through the emotional ringer. And I'll go home after a rehearsal and I'll just be like, I need to go to bed. I need to.
Are you drained?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then you think about the real life people who may end up showing up and looking for those help and that services. And, you know, it changes from a show that is entertaining to people on stage to something that is not only educating people in the audience, but potentially creating resources to help people avoid the choices that the characters make. I mean, absolutely. Ivana, what do you think?
I completely agree with what he said. It's just you go home and you're emotionally drained. In Act Two, it's Anita goes through so much that while we're blocking the scene and we're doing it, there's a moment that I have to step aside and I have to take a moment, maybe go to the bathroom, and I'm shaking. It's a moment that you just. I can stop, you know, I can stop and be like, listen, this is too much for me. I need to take a moment. And to think that people couldn't do that. It's like, I could barely deal with it. Yeah. And it's just, this is a show. I mean, and so I know that it just tells me how powerful this show altogether is. And so it just makes me more excited to show, you know, the audience of how, like, you know, how everything is.
Well, Annette Ramos, that brings me back to the conversation about whether somebody has that family member at that moment to step in and try to intervene. And what scares me is the notion of kids growing up without that support help. And again, I'm not saying every child in Rochester. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying every kid in every family. But that's concerning.
Well, I have been a teaching artist in the Rochester community for over 15 years, and what I have found is that we do have strong community ties. And within the Latino community, there are organizations that are incredibly powerful in their support of the community. It's the continuation of being able to provide services and continuation of being able to really impact and affect those kids. Last night, I'm at Avenue D in the heart of the inner city, 12 kids, parent participation, engagement, community working all together, boys playing basketball, young group of girls engaged in an art experience. It's just there, and it happens. It needs to be tapped into, and we also need within the media to really acknowledge our successes.
Absolutely.
Versus the sound bites of all the negative play. It's amazing for me to see it.
Well, this is a great example of that, of the great example of the successes. And you're right. I know Annette will continue to make sure that we at Connections and WXXI continue to acknowledge, because there is a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy if you're not careful, if the expectation is that there is no hope and that this is what happens. Eric Johnson, the director of West Side Story, when's the first time you saw it?
First time I saw West Side Story?
Yeah. Do you remember?
Probably when I was a kid, probably when I was 10 or 8. I watched the movie. I've seen it on stage several times. And I've always walked back with a different perspective on the show. And now being able to be engaged with the Rochester Latino Theater Company and RAPA, we're taking a new approach on it. We're taking a fresher approach on it to engage young adults. This show was based for now an adult and almost senior population now that grew up with West Side Story. And so we want to make sure that we don't forget about the young adults and college students and even high school students that may never have heard of West Side Story or may not have seen it. And the messages in the show are still impactful for today and what we're going through, what Rochester is going through. And that's really why we wanted to bring this to Rochester.
All right, Eric, we've been talking about the heavier stuff, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me something from the show that just people are going to love it just on the raw, visceral, artistic level, outside of the heavy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the talent in this show is incredible. All of the dance numbers are sharp. We have choreographers from the Draper School of Dance that are involved with the Rochester City Ballet that have put the dances together. We have some national artists helping with the vocals from the show. So we have a fantastic team that have brought the happy numbers, the exciting numbers to life that will bring the audience really, really high up, and then we'll drop them down in Act Two.
Well, you could have just waited to talk about Act Two. You could have just ended on the Act One stuff. The Rochester Latino Theater Company is helping present West Side Story at the Kodak Center for Performing Arts, the old theater on the Ridge, the 22nd of November through the 30th. Annette, where do they go for tickets?
They go to, they'll be available at Wegmans, but also on our website.
At kodakcenter.org or behind the box office at 325-3366.
All right, so you still have some time to plan for this run coming up here. Thanks for the actors to be in here. It's always great to talk to people who are on stage. I'm sure we'll congratulate you on the 30th when it's all over. I know it's tiring now. Thank you for taking the time. And Annette, 30 seconds. Sure, give me another positive sentiment to leave it. Because, again, this has been a rough, heavy hour, but, you know, real and raw issues. Give me something that makes you optimistic.
Rochester is an incredibly diverse community of artists. We have an international jazz festival. We have a High Falls Film Festival. It's now time to really embrace our Latino community and really participate and engage in West Side Story. It is not to be missed.
Okay, see? You've got something positive thinking about there. Thank you. Thank you, Erica. Really interesting stuff this hour. I really appreciate you all being here. One piece of housekeeping for our listeners. We typically have a rebroadcast of the program from 9 to 11. Tonight, it's election night, so we're going to be on the air live tonight, starting at 9 o'clock until midnight or beyond, in case we need to be. So we hope you'll be here tonight with us starting at 9 p.m., WXXI News and Connections live election coverage starting right here at 9 on WXXI Radio and WEOS throughout the Finger Lakes on 89.5 FM. Have a great election day. Go vote if you're so inclined. And if you feel like you want to and you're ready to go, that's where I'm going right now. Dave Campo, our engineer, thank you for your work behind the glass, and we'll see you tonight at 9 p.m.